Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, last week was our 50th episode. How does it feel to be on the other side of 50 now?
Woo! I guess we're, like, serious about this.
We really did it. Look at us go. I don't know if we set 50 as a goal, but... I mean, we made it there. That's impressive.
It wasn't a goal, to be clear. We didn't have a goal.
Yeah, we had no goal. We're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants.
So what does this do to all those, like, quasi-inspirational memes that show up on Facebook about setting goals? We didn't set a goal, and we made it.
We don't need goals.
I mean, we don't know we made it because we didn't set a goal. But
if we would have set a goal, we would have made it.
Right. If 50 would have been our goal, we would have made it.
Definitely. We crushed that. Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations to us. Big congratulations in order. That's well over 50 hours of baseball-related conversation.
There you go.
You're going to be a very well-documented human being for your new child this July.
You know, I was reading about wills. You're supposed to make a will when you have a child.
Right, yeah.
And they're recommending now that you set up a social media will.
Ooh.
Like, who are you going to give control of your Facebook account and your Twitter handle to? And do you want it to be shut down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are big questions. Right, yeah. If I die, I release all of my social media accounts to you. You can officially be in charge of them and post things on my behalf. Post things that you think a funny ghost Andy would say.
Wow, I don't know how this qualifies because this is a new area of law, but this is now like part of the public record.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's like official now. We could probably ask Chris.
Yeah.
We'll have to get Chris Bradley and ask him how official that is. But yeah, I put you in charge of that to only under the condition that the things that you post are funny things that a ghost Andy would say. That's it. They all have to be funny things that I would say as a ghost.
I don't know. I think that might have just avoided it by putting that restriction on there.
If they're not funny and I wouldn't say them if I were a ghost, then yeah, all of those accounts will be reverted back to somebody else.
To somebody. That's the whole point of a will. You have to decide who that somebody is.
Right. Well, I gotta find a list of people who will post things on my behalf as a as if I'm a funny ghost still posting things. So there will be a whole list of people I guess I'll have to have if you decide you can't post things for me as if I'm a funny ghost.
We are literally gone minutes into this podcast and already off the rails.
All right. Well, let's talk about something baseball related, Jason. How about that?
All right.
So Tribe fans probably aren't very happy with the All-Star ballot. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about this. In case those of you listening didn't hear about it, apparently, and Andy and I had to look into this because we don't really, what do you call it, follow the All-Star game?
No, not really.
So apparently on Tuesday, MLB released a updated ballot that showed the top 5 vote getters at every position or the top 15 for the entire outfield, because apparently MLB doesn't care about the difference between playing center field or right field.
No, nonsense.
So, anyways, in those updated rankings, there was no Indians player listed. Not a single positional player. Now, you might ask, who would be listed? The Indians have had a bad, you know, start to it.
Well, ooh, can I give you some names
I think? Yeah, I think you can come up with some names.
Now, remember, this is like a casual Indians fan observer. I get to watch the Indians basically any night that they aren't playing the same time as the Pirates. Last night I got to see the Indians, for example, because the Pirates played a day game against the Mets. So I'm going to say, just based on kind of the statistics I've seen, I'm going to guess Michael Brantley should be on there.
That'd probably be the leading candidate.
And then Well, I know Carlos Santana's not going to be on there because he's on my fantasy team.
No, no.
Lonnie doesn't have enough at bats.
Right.
Is Drubal, yeah.
Nah.
Kipnis has been on the shelf. He just came off the DL after a 4-week stint there for his oblique.
Correct.
Hmm.
Swisher's been off.
Who am I leaving out? So we got Brantley in center. Yep, Swisher, he's back on the shelf too.
And he's been bad.
And he's just, yeah, generally not been good.
I think if you're talking position players, you're really only looking at one other possibility, and he's in the outfield also.
Michael Bourne?
No.
He started the season on the DL, and he really hasn't done anything spectacular.
Like, he's been okay, but the guy you're probably – the only other possibility, and I
– Oh, hang on. I know. It's your boy, isn't it?
It is.
David Murphy.
And you might laugh. But David Murphy has a 268, 332, 429 slash and 31 RBIs. So, I mean, he's hanging in there. You know what I'm saying?
People should have to see his name on a ballot, I think, right, and make an informed decision.
Right. Now, but let's go back to the real slate, okay? Because David Murphy, he should probably be on a ballot, but he probably shouldn't, like, be on the All-Star team.
Right.
Now, Michael Brantley, if I were to tell you, okay, that Michael Brantley's statistics for the year, he's batting .310 with a .377 on base and a .510 slugging, 19 strikeouts against 19 walks, 8 stolen bases without being caught once, 9 home runs, 39 RBIs, 11 triples, and one, or 11 doubles and 1 triple. Does that sound pretty good to you?
That sounds very good.
A 152 OPS plus?
That's, for those unfamiliar, OPS plus is adjusted to a league average of 100. So, yeah, that's very good.
Now I'm going to read to you statistics for another player who is on the All-Star ballot. He's actually leading the All-Star ballot in total votes.
Okay.
281, 371, 531. So a little less average, maybe a little more power, right?
Okay.
60 whiffs against 29 walks, only 5 stolen bases, 10 homers, 35 RBIs, 11 doubles, and 4 triples. That would be Mr. Mike Trout.
No, that was going to be my guess.
So you could argue that Brantley's having, well, okay, so Trout's OPS plus is 154. So he's having, you know, a similar, at least, season to Mike Trout.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep, all right.
I mean, do you not agree?
No, I mean, statistically speaking, and that's the fun thing about statistics, I mean, yeah, those are pretty similar numbers.
Well, so if they're similar numbers, then what's the difference?
I mean, I very much see your point. Yeah, no, I definitely, I think from a statistical point of view, you make a very valid point there.
He's not on the ballot, though. Mike Trout.
That's kind of disrespectful, quite frankly, not having Michael Brantley on there with the season that he's having. I mean, you throw everybody on those All-Star ballots.
You know who's on there? Carlos Beltran, who's hitting like .230.
And is on the DL. Probably like David Lowe is on there.
Josh Hamilton's on there.
Mercyhurst graduate David Lowe's probably on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wow. Kind of surprised by that.
It's
shocked
it's
by that.
It's a little ugly. It's a little ugly.
Oof. Yeah, that just seems like somebody doesn't like Cleveland.
Apparently nobody's voting.
I guess. Jeez. Apparently, I'm going to have to get on there. Apparently, you better get logged on. Go vote.
Yeah, apparently you can vote 35 times.
Yeah, per email address or whatever. But here's the problem. You have to enter that CAPTCHA every time. Ugh.
Yeah.
Who wants to do that?
Who has time for that crap?
I don't have time for
and
that.
And now we see why he's not on the ballot.
CAPTCHAs are keeping him off the ballot.
That's, yep, gotta be.
The Michael Brantley CAPTCHA conundrum. I think we just came up with the title for this episode.
Yeah.
So is that it with the All-Star ballot? Anything else you feel like we need to touch on?
No, I got my Mike Trout comparison off, so that's
you got it off your chest. You had to let the world know that Michael Brantley is having a favorable season.
Isn't it shocking though?
In the context of Mike Trout, yes, that's very shocking. Yeah. Even more shocking that just Michael Brantley was not on the ballot anywhere. Yeah, wow.
That's shocking too. You know what's a little shocking, because I don't watch the Angels all the time, is how much Mike Trout strikes out.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of strikeouts.
I heard a stat, and I can't accurately reproduce it because it was like 2 weeks ago, but now I see what they were talking about. They were basically saying that young players that strike out at that level only like less than a quarter of them that are good when they're that young but strike out at that level end up being good.
Yeah, like successful.
Like it was like guys, it was like, you know, Babe Ruth and like these couple names sprinkled through this long list of guys. You're like, who?
Right. Yeah. That's funny.
But anyways.
All right. So moving on today, we're going to be talking about what's happening in Cleveland before we transition to Pittsburgh. Give a quick Seawolves shout out before we wrap up with a new segment that Jason and I like to call Step on the Scale.
Oh.
You're going to have to listen till the end to hear what this segment is all about.
What it entails.
Yeah, what it is. So, Jason, let's start off with the happenings in Cleveland. What's been going on since last week when we were talking about the Indians?
More of the same, man. More of the same.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah. Huh? The Who said that should be the theme of the Indians right now. I got some more stats to lay on you about this team. Try to make you understand, right?
Please, let me understand your sorrow.
So we're one third of the way through the season, and the Indians are 24-30. All right? So that is a pace of 72-90. Now, as Tony Kornheiser would say, let's go to the glasses. Last season at this point, the Indians were 29-25, so they were 4 games over .500. But that's kind of misleading because starting like today, they went on a streak where they lost 9 of their next 10. So on June 10th, they would be 30-33, very similar to where we stand right now, basically, right?
Right.
That's obviously... That's disappointing. They're last in the American League Central, and they're only a few games better than the Houston Astros. Ugh.
That's not good.
That's not good. So you may say to yourself, self, why is this team so bad? And it's almost like you asked me, what am I going to talk about? It's all like, I don't know. We can just replay the old podcast. It's the same crap. The defense is awful. I mean, there was like a stretch there where it was kind of coming around. Big surprise, that's when they were winning games. But it's awful again. And the left side of the infield is like a black hole, okay? Because on the right side, Nick Swisher was kind of getting it together, defensively at least, and now he's been replaced by Aguilar because they put Swisher on the DL. And while Aguilar has some, you know, long-term defensive questions, he's better than Swisher is right now. And Kipnis was struggling, and he's been on the DL, and he was replaced with Avilas, who has been their best infielder all year. So the right side of the infield was kind of, you know, holding its own, but the left side still stinks because... You've got Asdrubal Cabrera over there, who's made 8 errors in 47 games. And he's kind of like getting a pass because other people are so bad. Like, he's usually the whipping boy, as you know.
Right.
But other people are so bad, like, people aren't even concerned with Cabrera. And those other people are collectively the Indians' third base duo, who have made... 16 errors Tribe's third baseman have made 16 errors. Chisenhall has made 8 in 20 games. And so this is why all of a sudden you were seeing Lonnie Chisenhall playing first base. Because what Lonnie Chisenhall struggles with is throwing. It's not really fielding. He's actually got a average, if maybe not a tick above, glove. But man, he's chasing Pedro Alvarez for that beaning the guy in the front row behind first base award. I mean, oh my, like, I mean, I hear it. You know, it's like Chisenhall picks it up on the run, barehands it, throw to first. Yeah, it's in the bleachers. And it's disgusting. Now, your boy, so we're going to take the good with the bad. Your boy, Yan Gomes, he hasn't made an error since May 7th. Now, we all know that errors don't tell the whole story.
That is very true.
Because I think it was last night I was listening to the game, and he tried to throw somebody out, and they said that I don't remember if it was Cabrera or Kipnis, had to dive to the right-hand side of the bag to get the ball.
Yep, just to stop it, yeah.
So, that's the thing with this team. We can look at the errors, and the errors are bad, but when you count all the things that should have been or could have been errors, it's so much worse than the error totals even reveal. And I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what you do. I mean, what do you do?
That is a very good question. I don't know. And Gomes is an interesting case because he had such a great season defensively last year. You know, he came up and was just lighting the world on fire defensively, which wasn't really his shtick. You know, in the minors, there was never any talk of,
I mean,
and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't ever remember anyone saying like, oh, this guy's a plus defensive catcher.
No,
but he came up last year and was phenomenal.
That's the thing. And we talked about this once already this year. When they acquired him, no one, not the Toronto scouts, not the Indian scouts, not the scouting industry, viewed Gomes as a top flight defensive catcher. I mean, this is the guy when they acquired him, it was like, is he a first baseman, a third baseman, or a catcher? You don't do that with someone who's a top flight defender.
Right.
So, it's like you said, he's an interesting case, you know. Was last year a fluke, or is this year a fluke? Obviously, we hope that this year is the fluke. But
right, yeah.
We don't really have enough evidence to know.
And I mean, it's things too when you start, and you know, you can go look at these things sabermetrically, and they give you a fairly good indication. But if you're just watching enough baseball games, you're noticing, kind of like you touched on earlier, how balls are drifting to the other side of the bag, you know, the wrong side of the bag, or they're sailing a little bit high, or they're skipping in the dirt. I mean, he doesn't look like,
right, because
even the same catcher that he was last season,
right. If you make a throw that's on the line but head high, it's not going to be an error. They're going to catch it, but that's not
right.
That's not the kind of throw you need to make at the major league level to get someone out.
Right, to get guys out.
That's
exactly
the difference between throwing out Michael Brantley and not throwing him out. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean.
Can I touch on a stat with you since we're kind of mentioning sabermetrics?
Sure.
There's a stat called total zone fielding runs above average. So it measures the number of runs above or below average a player was worth based on the number of plays that they made. So it combines a bunch of a bunch of sabermetric statistics. So like right now your team with the best total zone fielding is Colorado, where they're basically worth 39 runs above average based on the number of plays that they're making. Dead last on this list, your Cleveland Indians at -42.
Well, I believe it. Oh, I believe it.
A folly of errors, some may say.
If you take like the Indians starting pitching staff is one of the best strikeout staffs in the league. If it wasn't for that, this team would be much worse because they're bailing them out constantly, you know, by their ability to get guys out without putting the ball in play. You look at Justin Masterson, we'll talk about him a little later maybe, but I think his ERA is like 5.21 or something. His fielding independent ERA is still in the fours, which is bad, but it's a whole run.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's why someone like Corey Kluber right now is really successful, because he's striking out so many people, the defense matters less when he goes out there. And that's why it'll be interesting to see how Josh Tomlin continues to fare, because while he was striking people out in the minors this year, strikeouts are not really part of his game. He's more of a contact pitcher. This is not the kind of team you want to be a contact pitcher in front of. I mean, like, everyone, and we've had this discussion too, everyone, you know, was giving the Indians crap about releasing Harang, and he's having such a great season with the Braves. He would probably be run out of town with this defense behind him, because the Braves, I think, have one of the best defenses, and they're saving his bacon left and right. And if he was with the Indians, he probably would have given up, I don't know, I'm just like, I was going to make this number up, full disclosure, but he'd probably give up twice as many runs.
Right, yeah. Yeah, boy, I guess I didn't realize how bad times were in Cleveland defensively. You know, like, I heard you talking about it, and then, you know, we even looked at that collection of gifts the other day.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm like, well, it can't be that bad. Boy, I looked at that. That is a negative 42.
Yeah.
The next closest is Minnesota at negative 23.
Well, I saw.
Oh, my goodness.
I saw someone say that the Indians, like, UZR rating is second to last, and they were saying, like, that's got to be proof that system is flawed, because no one should the Indians. Something needs to be tweaked in that metric. Anyways, on the flip side, they're actually fifth in the American League in runs scored. Although, I have to guess that if you sort that as a split, it's all against right-handers. I mean, they stink versus lefties. I mean, it's ugly. I don't have
right.
numbers in front of me. It would turn my stomach. I just ate. But to that point, I just want to throw this out there, because this is like my stat edition, because I don't know what else to talk about. I mean, I've been hammering these same points home. Michael Brantley, the aforementioned all-star snub.
All-star ballot snub.
Yeah. And David Murphy, who we discussed maybe should be on the ballot at least, they've combined for 70 RBIs so far. No one else on the team has more than 19.
Oh, my.
So they each have, you know, in the 30s somewhere, and they're doubling up the next closest person, who I think is Yan Gomes. So the injury bug has rolled into town, which has made things a little more interesting.
That spices things up a little bit.
Yeah. After a really good series in Baltimore, Carlos Santana took a foul tip off the mask. So he's been placed on the 7-day DL for concussion symptoms. So that's always good. They brought up George Kateris to take his place. And they put Nick Swisher on the DL for knee pain. Now, the interesting thing, and I probably don't have the knees in the right order, but it doesn't really matter. His one knee was, his like left knee was bothering him, and then like 2 days later, they put him on the DL for his right knee. Now,
my dad has similar problems like that.
Yeah.
Both his knees hurt all the time.
That's what we're getting to, that point that you stole my thunder, in that they gave him an MRI and it came back clean. There was no structural damage. So what does that mean? It means he has arthritis.
Yeah, just you're just getting old.
So whatever that's worth. So they brought up Jesus Aguilar to replace him. Now, last time we talked, as we continued the roster shuffle, they were in a bit of a bind with their rotation. If you remember, they had to like use Tomlin at the end of a 13-inning game. You remember that?
Yeah.
He was supposed to pitch the next day. And it was all like they had to choose between Kyle Davies and Travis Banwart. And remember, TJ House couldn't be called back because they had just sent him down and all that.
Right, the 10-day thing.
Well, they bumped Justin Masterson up to pitch on 3 days rest. I guess they figured, like, well, he stinks anyways right now, so how much worse can it be? And then the next day they put Zach McAllister on the DL with, I think it was back tightness, which allowed them to call up TJ House. And
which, an interesting aside, before McAllister went on the DL, do you know what he had done in his start previous to going on the DL?
Start previous? It was like the three starts previous. He stunk.
Well, but that was, or was it three starts previous? A few starts before he went on the DL then. Zach McAllister pitched on 3 days rest.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was having a great start to his season.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I just noticed he started throwing a couple clunkers out there and went and looked at it. And it all started right after his start on 3 days rest.
That's very true. And there was a lot of questioning about why that was even necessary, because they could have waited a few days and kind of reorganized the rotation without that. But apparently they had seen enough.
That was it.
Carlos Carrasco, I think that was the day they got rid of him.
Yeah.
So anyways, they brought up TJ House, who is actually, he's pitched very well. You said you saw
his last start looked great.
Yeah, he pitched very serviceable in his first start, and last night was even better. He was very good last night. So what you're seeing is that this trio of Bauer, House, and Tomlin is actually kind of holding down the fort, while Corey Kluber is just turning into a stud.
Oh, the Corey Kluber Society is excited.
But Justin Masterson is just not pulling his weight. I mean,
which is probably not good for him in a contract year.
No. Generally, that's a poor thing. He's about 3 miles an hour down on his fastball, which that's what's concerning to me. Not that you're down. I mean, if you're down and it's April and it's cold and the season's just started, that's one thing. But it's June now.
Right.
I mean, he's made, I don't know, 8 starts probably.
Well, and the statistics show, too, starts. Your fastball generally throughout the course of the season is going to gain, on average, at most around 1 mile an hour.
Right.
So if you're down 3 miles an hour, you're probably not making up that velocity before the end of the season.
Yeah. And he's got to be hurt.
Right. Which is, that's what you think. You can either come to two conclusions. He's hurt or he's just permanent. He's lost that. He's
wearing out.
Right. Those 2 ticks on his fastball.
Yeah. So that's not good.
Which neither of those are very happy thoughts.
Neither one of those are good. But, man, this Chris Antonetti, for all the crap, he gets, and I gave him some, about not taking that offer from Justin Masterson, he looks pretty darn smart right now.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm glad they didn't take my advice. Because I don't want to pay a guy $40 million even for 2 years if he's going to pitch like this.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Agreed.
The last thing I want to talk about with the Indians is that next Thursday is the amateur draft. And the Indians have a first-round pick, then a pick in the compensatory round.
All right.
For losing Ubaldo Jimenez. Then it
could be the best thing Ubaldo did in Cleveland was leave.
Yeah. and then a pick in the competitive balance round, and then a pick in the second round. So they'll have four picks the first night.
Jeez.
And it's pick 21, pick 31, and pick 38. I'm not going to get into a bunch of names or anything because I don't have the street cred to legitimately talk about that kind of thing with any substance. But what I will say is that they have kind of been alternating back and forth the last few years. Like Francisco Lindor was a high school player. Tyler Nakun was a college player. Clint Frazier was a high school player. So obviously, and with three picks, you would think that at least one of them is probably going to be a prep player because you're willing to take that risk for the big payoff if you have three picks. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them take a prep player at some point, maybe even a prep pitcher. I do think, though, that this is probably the year where they start to break away from building just exclusively up-the-middle talent. They're in desperate need of some power bats. And the one name I'm going to throw out there, because I've seen it mentioned a couple different places for them, is Casey Gillespie, who's the little brother of Connor Gillespie. He plays first base for Wichita State. He is a hulking 6'4", 238.
Ooh, that's a healthy size.
And right now at Wichita State, he's slashing 393, 500, 674. So that might be someone, you know, with those three picks that they look at. He's kind of projected as a late first round, early second round guy, which slots right into their wheelhouse there. The thing that's a little different this year is they're picking a lot later. You know, Naquin, Frazier, Lindor all got picked in the top 10, if not the top 5. So it's hard to predict. You know, usually you know who the top 5 or even maybe pretty good idea who the top 10 are going to be. But by the time you get to 21, 25, whatever, in baseball, there's so many factors with the signability, the depth or weaknesses of your entire system. It's hard to say who they're going to pick. I mean, they always say they're going to pick the best player available, but when you have a system loaded with middle infield prospects, if that's the best player, are you really going to take that guy?
Right. Yeah.
Probably not. You know, you're going to try to fill the holes the best you can without sacrificing too much. But I would expect one of those guys to be a pitcher, and then they'll probably take a power arm or a power bat somewhere in those first three picks, and the third one's probably going to be more of the wild card, you know. So they maybe will take just the best player available at that pick.
Right.
But
okay.
Next Thursday.
We also refer to that around these parts as the day Kendrys Morales can play baseball again.
Yeah, apparently the Yankees are talking to him.
Oh, really?
I saw that MLB trade rumors.
Good for them. Good for them. Probably that means they're a little nervous about that inflammation in Teixeira's wrist, so.
I would be, too.
Yeah, I guess. Can we talk about Pittsburgh now? Are we ready to transition there? Anything else with Cleveland would be good?
This just popped up on my screen, and it's so perfect. Because who, of course, offered Kendrys Morales that qualifying offer that's putting his 2014 right down the drain? The Seattle Mariners, right?
Yep.
They decided today to sign journeyman outfielder / first baseman Xavier Nady.
Ooh, the X-Man.
So I guess he's definitely not going back to the Mariners.
I think it's safe to say now that you have Justin Smoke and Corey Hart and Xavier Nady. Yeah. You're probably not welcome back in Seattle. Just a hunch.
Former pirate.
Former pirate, yes. We also former hits generator for Jeff Perlman's probably easily most popular commented on blog post ever was the day that he was trolling Pirates fans. I forget. We talked about it on the podcast. He said, how he didn't like the trade, how the Pirates kind of undersold themselves when they traded Marte and Navy. And, oh boy, that did not go over well with Pittsburgh fans. But that's a story for a different day. Let's move on to current Pittsburgh Pirates news. The first of which I say a little heavy-heartedly, Jason, that Filthy Phil Irwin.
Oh, man.
You may know him on the Twitter as Filthy Phil 36. He has been claimed off waivers by the Texas Rangers. It is the end of an era in Pittsburgh with Filthy Phil. He had a couple bumps in the road towards the end of his tenure in Pittsburgh with the arm problems and all that. But, you know, great talent, really live fastball. Maybe he'll, you know, we certainly wish him well in Texas. Hope everything works out for him there, and hope to see him pitching in the majors at some point in the near future. So no more Filthy Phil. We're going to be talking a lot less about Filthy Phil around these parts, I suppose.
Yeah. Goodbye, Phil.
It's a shame because you don't get a good Twitter handle like that to come around but once or twice a generation. That's like the Mike Trout of Twitter handles there, Filthy Phil.
Especially for...
And now... So now, gone. But good luck, Phil. We wish you the best in Texas. Moving on to Pittsburgh's newfound winning ways. Pittsburgh last week rattled off 4 wins, starting with a win against Baltimore, and then a few more against the Nationals, which was nice to see because they had not been winning a lot of games prior to that. not a lot of winning happening in Pittsburgh. In fact, I would go as so far to say that there was more losing than there was winning.
I think the record backs that up.
Yes, the statistics do support that. So they came, you know, nice little 4-game winning streak. You like to see it. Then they went into New York where you're thinking like, all right, the Mets are not very good. They dropped 2 out of 3 to the Mets. Bartolo Colon just shoved it down their throats yesterday. Not a good series against the Mets.
During the Indians game, Tom Hamilton was like, Bartolo Colon shuts up. Like, Tom Hamilton, he always gives the Pirates update. He's always disgusted.
Yeah, he just, no matter what is happening, he's always just like shocked by the awfulness.
Somehow he puts a bad spin on it.
Oh, jeez. So, dropped 2 out of 3 of the Mets. They're starting a little West Coast road trip now. 4-game set against the Dodgers starting tonight. And can you believe it, Jason? 4-game set against the Dodgers. The Pirates are going to miss Clayton Kershaw in that 4-game series.
You would think this would work out in your favor. You'd think this would be a boon for your...
Typically, you would feel pretty happy about that, but the other 4 starters that they have to face, and I mean, you can take it for what it's worth, but they're facing Dan Heron, who's, you know, up and down with his career lately. Josh Beckett coming off throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Hyunjin Ryu.
Coming off like 7 innings of no hit.
Right, who's been really solid since coming to Los Angeles. And then they wrap up against Zach Greinke.
Oh, who I think has allowed... Oh, it's a great stat. Hold on, let me pull it up.
Yeah, go dig around. So, you know, you miss out on Clayton Kershaw, arguably the best person on the planet at throwing a baseball at this moment. And instead, you luck out with those 4 guys.
How?
Honestly, pitching well lately.
How? If that team does not make the playoffs...
Someone's getting fired.
I mean, Hanley Ramirez, Puig, Crawford.
Oh, Crawford, Ethier.
Ethier. What's...
Look at their bullpen that they just went out. You know, like, they're signing Chris Perez to be, like, their 6th inning guy.
They have... Agon, right?
Right, yeah, Adrian Gonzalez. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then you get their 5 starting pitchers who have, you know, been all-world pitchers at some point in their career.
Oh, so Zach Greinke, he actually broke the stat since I heard it, okay? Because he allowed 3 earned runs on Tuesday. But before that start... He had not allowed more than 2 earned runs in a outing all year.
Oh boy.
And what broke it is 3 runs in 7 2/3 innings while striking out 11 and walking zero.
That, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and we're going to do some foreshadowing.
I think
here.
That game actually went okay, even though he broke his little streak.
For a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates, who is 26th in baseball overall in runs scored, I'm going to go ahead and say this is probably not a combination that's going to lead to success.
Ugh.
Just going out on a limb, I'm going to say Pirates fans may be a little frustrated after this four-game series in Los Angeles.
He's striking out 10.4 per nine.
Greinke is?
Yeah.
Aye. Oh boy, yeah, that's gonna be. You're gonna want to tune in. You're gonna want to tune into that one on Sunday to potentially see a perfect game from start to finish.
Oh, ooh, a prediction.
if Kershaw were throwing, I'd have my bet in Vegas already.
No.
Whatever the odds were on that perfect game.
I bet Greinke's out pitching Kershaw right now.
Yeah, Kershaw sputters a little bit coming off the, but he's still Clayton Kershaw.
That's, yeah, I know.
I would still rather, I guess, if you made me choose one, I'd rather face Zach Greinke than Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
So that's what we have to look forward to this weekend. Hopefully we get to go take it out on the Padres, who we play right after that.
Don't sleep on the Padres, man.
Yeah, they're actually, well, offensively, they're terrible everywhere except for left field, where Seth Smith has just been playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
But pitching wise, they've been pretty good. Like Jed Jericho's a mess. Everett Cabrera's been eh. Chase Headley, I don't know. It was like he accidentally figured out that he was good at baseball and then just totally forgot after that half season. I don't feel nervous about the Padres. Like, I'm nervous that there might be like a 4-game series against the Dodgers where we get outscored like 45-2. Yeah, not looking forward to it. But we've got another 50 minutes until that game gets underway. So,
just so you know, while Kershaw is allowing more runs, his strikeout per nine is actually 11.7.
Oh boy, yeah, I'm sure that's gonna go over well with the free swinging nature of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
You know what is making me laugh right now? On the top of the baseball reference page for Clayton Kershaw is this link to an article apparently from a website called Lasorda's Lair, which is a great website. But it says, you know who is allegedly still alive? Chad Billingsley.
You know, I kind of forgot that he was a person. What is he? What's Billingsley up to nowadays?
I don't know. I'm going to click on it because it says rotation question marks looming with the return of Billingsley. Like, where would you put him in that rotation, as we just explained?
Right, yeah.
He should be sent to the bullpen. Hang out
good luck there.
Hang out with Chris Perez and what's his
name? Kenley Jansen.
And the bearded one.
Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those weirdos out there. Well, you figure out Chad Billingsley's whereabouts. I'm going to talk about what many have called the most amazing catch in Andrew McCutchen's tenure in Major League Baseball that he made against the Mets on Tuesday. And I happened to be watching this game live, so I actually got to see it and stood up on my couch and yelled, probably giving my fiance a pretty good scare. But it was pretty amazing watching the distance that McCutchen covered, the ground that he covered from center field to right center to make a, you know, like you get diving catches where you're like, they probably didn't need to dive. I mean, it was like a full-on extension, just amazing diving catch. Maybe we'll post the video, because I don't think I actually posted the video on Facebook. Maybe I'll post the video on Facebook. If any of you haven't seen the catch, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, you'll be hard-pressed to find a better catch this season. You know, like they were all up in arms about Yasiel Puig's catch the other day, which Puig did cover a lot of ground, but the catch itself wasn't that pretty. He kind of like dove and like rolled on his wrist a little bit. And I mean, McCutchen's looks beautiful. So, yeah, if you haven't seen that, definitely check it out. Yeah. But I think it goes to show, again, those when you're talking about, you know, we kind of talked about it with Jedlivek, Ben Jedlivek at the beginning of last season. But when you talk about how to measure players defensively, you know, that's the kind of thing, if you're keeping track of that caliber of play and the distance that he had to cover on that play, I mean, that kind of thing is going to factor into his improved defense, you know, as he continues to progress, if he's continually making plays like that.
Right.
Yeah, we already kind of covered Cleveland's all-star snubs, but for Pittsburgh right now, it's kind of looking like McCutchen and Neil Walker are poised to be the all-star representatives for the Pirates.
Neil Walker, my boy.
Yeah, Neil Walker having a great season this year. Leading all second baseman in home runs and RBI. I think he's, in the article I read, it said he was like fifth in the balloting or something, though. Like a few hundred thousand behind Chase Headley, who is the leader.
Yeah, because he's having such a good year.
Right, yeah. Because, you know how accurate all-star ballots are. So, yeah, I guess just something to keep an eye on. I guess it's a neat accolade, but I know all of those guys would trade in all of their all-star selections, you know, just probably to get another crack at the playoffs again. So, you know, it is what it is. I guess it's nice to be represented and seen on a national platform like that, but ultimately nobody, I think, who follows baseball really cares a whole lot. And then, you know, just the last thing I wanted to touch on was the Pirates just overall, you know, going into tonight, they're sitting at 23-29, which is still eight games behind Milwaukee. When you factor in that the Pirates are 2-8 against the Brewers this season, it kind of makes you wonder what could be if Pittsburgh had just played like marginally better towards the beginning of the season. But again, you know, their warts are still showing this year. We've been talking about it all season long. They didn't improve their offense and they're still 26th in runs scored in baseball this season. You know, if you're looking at their productivity, it's actually not all that bad. You know, they have a team 322 on base percentage, a team 375 slugging percentage. Their team OPS plus is 97. I mean, they're getting on base. They're not hitting for a lot of power, which that seems to be the big problem. And the other thing that you have to consider is they've left 391 runners on base already. That's the seventh most in baseball. There's a lot of ducks staying on that pond.
You know what part of the problem is, though? Because Neil Huntington, just like Chris Antonetti, they take this at least somewhat of a sabermetric approach where you look at on-base percentage. When you're looking at on-base percentage, I'd be interested to ask somebody like Ben Jedlivek, but it would seem to me intuitively like if you're building a team around on-base percentage, you're going to leave more guys on base.
Yeah. If you don't have guys, especially if you don't have guys lower in the order to drive them in.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like if you're focusing more on moving the line rather than power hitters or, you know, whatever you want to call it, again, intuitively, not backed up by statistics.
Right. Yeah.
It would seem like you would leave more people on base. I was having this. Yeah. I had this discussion with Dr. Garrett on the way home from Cleveland. That's why I was so quick to bring it up. But anyways, continue.
You've had it on the tip of your tongue, just waiting for a good time to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it in Pittsburgh. So we're just still on a Gregory Polanco watch, just waiting for that imaginary Super 2 deadline to pass so we can give him a shot. Yeah.
Still holding on, man. Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I've waited this long.
Yep. Just, hey, you tested. Don't let go.
Yeah.
Don't let go.
I made it this far.
All right. Well, let's do a quick Seawolf shout out here.
All right.
Ooh. So the Seawolves down the Harrisburg Senators today, 5-1. Their record currently sits actually at 23-29 on the season as well. Very serendipitous when you're talking about the Seawolves and Pirates having similar records, huh?
Yes, how serendipitous.
Very. It's very. Actually had a chance to go to the Memorial Day game, day game against Altoona. It was a buck night during the day. Some may call it a buck day.
How confusing.
And there was no Buck Knight at the stadium. We were curious as to whether we would see Sir Buck Knight, the gallant Sir Buck Knight.
Yeah.
Sir Buck Knight was not at the Buck Day. So
even more.
I guess he is a nocturnal knight. But we had a chance to see. Did you like that? It took a minute for you to laugh. I was wondering if you just thought it was really not that funny.
No.
Or whether there was.
It's funny.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Very alliterative, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So during the day game, I had a chance to see Nick Kingham take on Warwick Saupold of the Seawolves. Nick Kingham being Altoona's pitcher and one of our top 20 prospects. Kingham actually had a really solid day. His only two mistakes that he made all day long. One was to Stephen Moya, who had a great day. Moya started in right field. He finished the day 3-for-4 with a single, double, and his eighth home run off Nick Kingham in the second inning. His second mistake was to Corey Jones, who absolutely destroyed a ball. Just mule-hacked a ball over Holland Street. That's on the outside of the stadium, for those of you unfamiliar with the geography of Geriat Park. But yeah, just destroyed a ball over Holland Street and right off that little building that the City of Erie owns, or the Seawolves own, or whatever it is. It's got the Erie stuff on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were both solid shots. But, I mean, they were the only two runs that he gave up on the day. Kingham looked solid. His fastball was really, really lively. He touched 96 on the stadium gun, which I was really surprised by. But he was, you know, he was very, very efficient on the day. You know, other than those two mistakes, he finished the day throwing seven innings. He only threw 82 pitches. And I could even tell at the game, like, I mean, the game was going at a really quick pace. Kingham only surrendered 5 hits, one walk, and he had 4 Ks on the day. So it was good to see Kingham kind of in control of the game like that. Alan Hansen was one of Pittsburgh's top prospects that we had ranked at TSM Baseball here. He smashed a home run for the Altoona Curve as well. So the Seawolves start a home series versus the Reading Fighting Phils this weekend. And so if you get a chance to get out to Geriat, it's going to be a howl of a good time there. Now some important news to make sure that we touch on about the Seawolves before we move on to our new segment. Eugenio Suarez, the former Erie Seawolves shortstop. We call him the former Erie Seawolves shortstop because
he's moving on up.
He is. He is. Just like the Jeffersons, he is moving on up, except to Toledo.
Yeah.
Not to the east side.
Okay. Similar.
So, yeah, right. I'm sure, yes, very similar. Yeah. So moved up to Toledo, and it was kind of neat. Tom Reisenweber, the beat writer for the Erie Seawolves at the what is it, the Tribune? Erie Times. Actually went to the game and while he was at the game tweeted that general manager Dave Dombrowski and Jim Leland were there to watch Suarez play.
Yep.
On a Tuesday. So fairly soon after that he got the call, got promoted, and he's actually been playing really, really well in Toledo. He got pulled from a game today, though, due to some back tightness, so just kind of worth keeping an eye on. He's kind of moving up through the ranks there relatively quickly.
The Tigers, of course, are quick promoters.
They are very aggressive promoters, as you can tell by Nick Castellanos manning third base in Detroit this season already.
Yeah, and of course, the Tigers lost their presumed starting shortstop in Jose Iglesias with the stress fractures in both shins, which sounds awful, for the season, and they've been kind of holding things together with guys like Andrew Romine, short. And so there is, you know, there's this thought that, well, the Tigers are going to make a move eventually. So conversely, there's a school of thought that before the Tigers feel pressured into making a trade for a shortstop, they might bring up Suarez and see if he can provide them with, you know, serviceable play without giving anything up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and like you said, they're aggressive promoters. If they think they can fill a spot from within serviceably, that they have no problem in you know, trying to take care of those things internally.
They have a long history of quick promotion.
Which makes it a lot of fun, I will say, being, you know, 5 minutes away from Geria Park. You're getting to see this talent at the major league level pretty quickly. So that's kind of neat.
I've been to two games this year, and Steven Moya has impressed me in both games.
My Lord, Moya is just pounding the ball.
Yeah.
That was Moya's eighth home run. I think he's hit one since then, so he's at 9 or 10 home runs on the season.
And he's a tall but athletic-looking person with a nice swing, and man, can he do some damage with it.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely caught my attention this season, absolutely. I know he'll definitely be a guy worth keeping an eye on over the coming seasons. So, Seawolves, shout-out. It's a hell of a good time. Get out to Geriot. Watch them play this weekend as they face off against the Reading Fightin' Phils. So, Jason, can we do our new segment?
Sure.
I'm kind of excited about this. We don't have a drop for it yet. I was going to get ready to pause there so you could insert the drop, but then I realized...
Yeah, we'll get one next time.
Yeah, we'll work on a drop for this. It'll be a good one. So this is our new segment is titled Step on the Scale. It's kind of quick. It's intended to be quick, so we can just kind of quick and fun.
I think you cut out just a little. So to reiterate, it's called Step on the Scale.
Yes, Step on the Scale, and it is intended to be quick and fun.
So we're going to – today, I'm going first. So we're going to grade on a scouting scale because I think it's appropriate. So we're going to go 20 to 80.
20 to 80 on different topics.
20 being low, 80 being the highest possible grade.
Yes. 80 would be like your best Hall of Famer, awesome grade.
Right.
And 20 would be like you should be back in single A type grade, not good.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, Jason, let me ask you, on the 20 to 80 scale, how would you rate Carlos Santana's season thus far?
I'm gonna have to say 40. Because there's so much left to be desired, but he's still getting on base.
Good. On a 20 to 80 scale, how would you rate Pedro Alvarez this season so far?
He's not hitting for average at all, right?
Nope.
But he's hitting home runs.
Yep.
Oh, boy. 50.
50.
I mean, isn't that kind of what you expect?
You think a little better than Carlos?
I mean, he's hitting home runs, so right. He's driving people in.
Yep, still getting on base a little bit.
I would say he's having a better... Well, he's hitting like 220 probably, right?
Yeah.
That's much better.
Low 200s. Okay, so we'll give it a 50. On a 20 to 80, how would you rate Justin Masterson's season thus far?
I'm tempted to go lower than 40. And the reason I'm tempted to go lower than 40 is because it's a contract year. So if you're Justin Masterson, not only is it going bad, it's like it's an inopportune moment. So I'm going to say 35.
Okay, 35, good. On a 20 to 80 scale, what would you say the chances of Asdrubal Cabrera remaining with the Cleveland Indians all season long are?
Fifth.
80 being he absolutely remains with the Cleveland Indians, and 20 being he will be traded before the end of the season.
50.
Ooh, right in between, huh? Splitting the difference.
I think it depends how the next month goes. If they pull it together, they're not going to trade him. If it's headed for the tank, they will trade him. So that number could change in a month. It could change.
20 days. Okay, within the week. All right. All right, so let's piggyback on that. 20-80 on the chances Francisco Liriano is the starting shortstop for Cleveland this season.
Now I need some clarification here. By this, you mean that Ezreal Cabrera is gone?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, you don't mean like in September when they call him up. I mean, he will start games at shortstop. That would be an 80.
How about chances that he takes the job from Ezdrubal Cabrera?
Like, they bench Ezdrubal Cabrera?
For Lindor.
20.
No chance.
I mean, if they're going to trade him, if anything. They won't just bench him. He's getting too much money.
Too much money. Okay.
They won't bench someone making $10 million.
20-80 scale on Major League Baseball's All-Star ballot.
This isn't on the list.
No, I threw that one in there. Threw the old curveball there.
Wait, 20-80 on what?
On Major League Baseball's All-Star ballot.
Like, what do you mean?
20 being awful and 80 being great.
Like the ballot itself?
The ballot itself.
20.
With the omission of every single Cleveland Indians player.
Zero.
You give it a less than a 20.
It'll probably have Alex Rodriguez on it. It probably would. Bud Selig's probably striking all those votes. People are probably voting for Alex Rodriguez. He just won't allow that.
Bud Selig personally rips up those ballots?
Yeah. He warms his feet by the fire.
He's turning them into confetti for the World Series champion this season. Yeah. That's what those ballots are for?
Exactly. It's the white in the World Series confetti.
I like it. Well, that's step on the scale. I like that. That was fun. That was quick.
Well, you missed one, so I'll ask you. 20-80, Garrett Cole's season.
Ooh, okay. All right. You want to get me in on this action. All right. Let's give it a... Let's give it a 65.
Yeah.
65. I'd say it's a good season.
I heard a number the other day you're not going to like.
Oh, all right. Go ahead. Tell me.
So, you know, there's this thought that pitchers who throw harder are more susceptible to Tommy John.
I have heard this rumor.
And the guys who throw the hardest right now are like Yordano Ventura. We're talking starting pitchers.
Right.
Yordano Ventura. And then there's Garrett Richards, I think that's his name.
Yep, for the Angels. And then you have Nathan Eovaldi.
Right. And then I think the next guy is Garrett Cole.
Our 2011 first overall pick, Garrett Cole.
I'm just saying.
Maybe he's the outlier of this whole Tommy John epidemic. That's what I'd like to think. That's what I keep telling myself. That's the only thing that gets me through most of my days, Jason.
It's possible. I mean, did Randy Johnson ever have Tommy John?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Nolan Ryan? Yeah. Pitched until he was like 55. I mean, there's guys that do it.
I wonder what Nolan Ryan's average fastball velocity was.
Ooh. That would be a very good question. I don't know.
You know what I mean? While those guys were fast for their time, I wonder. I bet it's on this page, but this could like crash my computer.
Yeah, do that.
Because it's a Bleacher Report article.
We'll find that information and post it somewhere later. Yeah, so I'd say 65, you know, kind of high whip. Got to kind of iron out some of those control issues. But other than that, striking out a lot of guys, 60 strikeouts on the season. He's going out there giving you games, keeping you in them at least, just about every start. So, yeah, 65, good season, not a great season yet. So, well, I think that's going to wrap up our podcast for today.
All right.
That was kind of a fun way to close that. We'll have to incorporate that game in there a little bit more. So we'd like to again thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. We'll be recording at some point next week, either a little bit before or a little bit after the draft, I'm sure. So we'll have some draft updates for you. Until then, you can follow us on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.